Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Good morning. It's a holiday week, which means lots of holiday songs. Are there some songs you can't get out of your head, or are there some songs you just love hearing over and over again?
Hi, it's Paul. My favorite song has become All I Want for Christmas Is You, because it takes the onus off gifts, takes the onus off whether it snows or not, where we're located. It just kind of makes it personal. Have a happy holidays.
I love this song. This is my favorite holiday song. I love this song. Thank you, George. Happy holidays to you, too. We want to hear about what your favorite song is, or the one that just, like, grates your nerves. 877-8-MY-TAKE or MyTAKE at thetakeaway.org.
Cheese for the holidays here on The Takeaway. So, in a story that has yet another frustrating set of implications for Americans in the post-9/11 era, and also for lawyers and individuals attempting to seek justice in this puzzling era, jurors have found five Muslim immigrants guilty of conspiring to kill U.S. soldiers at the Fort Dix Army Base in New Jersey, but they acquitted the five of attempted murder. Prosecutors painted the verdict as a victory over homegrown terrorism, while defense attorneys argued that the government relied on a paid informant who they characterized as more of a con man to get their case. George Anastasia is a reporter from the Philadelphia Inquirer who is on this story. He joins us from Pittman, New Jersey. George, thanks for being with us.
Sure. How are you?
Let me just begin with the sort of citizen of America question. How am I to feel about the fact that these five immigrants are now found guilty and can theoretically face life in prison over these charges and this conviction?
Well, I think what this case is about on one level is the emotional reaction to terrorism. And if you're caught up in a terrorism case, it's going to be a lot more difficult to defend yourself. I mean, that's part of what happened here. There's no doubt there was evidence. In fact, most of the evidence in the case was not disputed. The question throughout the case was, what was the intent? Yeah, they said this. Yeah, they did that. But what did they, you know, what was the purpose behind it? And that's where we are. And the split decision kind of, to me, indicates the jury at least was aware and conscious of that and making an effort to parse the charges. But the bottom line is, these five are still looking at potential life in prison because they were convicted of conspiracy here.
I want to talk about the defense's charges against the prosecution in a moment, but is it fair to say that this is a case where individuals who act badly versus individuals who act badly but are intending to carry things out is really the ambiguity, that there's a lot of people that do things that are offensive, but that doesn't necessarily constitute a crime?
Now, yeah, I think what you've got to put the context of terrorism to talk about what you intend to do in the context of post 9/11 America and jihad and radical Islam. Those kind of things are I think were the factors that played in this case, separate and apart from the evidence and the testimony. It was that whole kind of aura of terrorism that kind of hangs over the country right now.
All right, well, let's listen to Rocco Cipriani, who's the defense attorney, talking about the role of the informants in this case, which, as we've said, the defense said was key, that if there had not been these informants, there would not have been this plot. But here's Attorney Cipriani.
My personal opinion is that there would not have been a plan or advancement of these alleged objectives without these two informants being involved.
Now, is it possible that the defense has it wrong? Well, I mean, certainly the jury thinks that the defense had it wrong, but this is a case of investigators acting preemptively, attempting to get out in front of terrorists, regardless of their competence.
I mean, yeah, that's the whole strategy, your preventive arrest. When do you move in and break up an alleged plot? Or do you wait until they've got the guns in the car and they're driving to Fort Dix? I mean, that's the fundamental question in all of this. And the jury obviously agreed with the prosecution that there was a plot. And the fact that they found him not guilty of attempted murder, I think, indicates they believe they hadn't taken any substantive step to put that plot in motion. But it doesn't – I mean, that's, I guess, both the benefit and the the negative of a conspiracy charge. I mean, defense attorneys hate a conspiracy charge because it's you know, it's a big umbrella. But prosecutors love a conspiracy charge because a lot of separate
it's a big umbrella.
Can be put together. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And George,
there you go.
When you came here to report to us last time, you said one of the questions would be whether or not there was a sense the jury was looking at these defendants as guilty and therefore was looking for evidence to show their innocence as opposed to what the basic tenet of criminal law in our country is, which is you're innocent until proven guilty. Having watched this trial now, what do you think the jury started out with as they listened to this testimony with all of these very explosive buzzwords as you laid them out?
Well, I think the fact that this jury took 6 days to reach this verdict indicates to me that they were serious about what they were doing and they took their job seriously. And I don't think it was a slam dunk. I would love to talk to some of the jurors. So far, they've indicated they don't want to speak to us. So, you know, I think in that sense, the system worked, but the emotionalism that comes into play had a lot to do with this. The other factor, and this may come up on appeal, is the judge allowed the prosecution to enter videotapes that two of the defendants had downloaded onto their laptops that were depictions of beheadings in Iraq, suicide missions in Iraq, radical Islamic speeches. The defense argued none of that had anything to do with the plot to attack Fort Dix. The prosecution argued that it went to the mindset of the defendants. And I think that had to create an emotional aspect to the jury. And the other thing that factored in, and don't lose sight of this, is Mumbai happened about a week and a half before deliberations began.
That's interesting.
And one of the last prosecution witnesses, the rebuttal witness, was an FBI terrorism expert who got up on the stand and said, it doesn't take a lot for five or six people to launch an attack. If you've had the weapons, you know, you can do it. And then he cited Mumbai.
Wow.
And I think that's something else. I mean, the jury's not in a vacuum. They're not supposed to be reading about the Fort Dix trial as it unfolds, but everything else, every other event that happens, they're exposed to that.
Well, in a post 9/11 era, there's no such thing as a vacuum. A post 9/11 is very interesting. It seems like the takeaway is that at the very least, the juror permits this kind of preemptive behavior on the part of prosecutors to get out in front of the intent of even incompetent terrorists. George, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
George Anastasia is a reporter for the Philadelphia Inquirer covering the case of five Muslim immigrants found guilty of conspiring to kill U.S. soldiers at the Fort Dix Army Base in New Jersey.